Hi there. Today I'm here with Adrian Horning. He is known as the web scraping guy, and he launched scrapecreators.com a year ago. He's based in Austin, Texas, and I'm very excited to talk to you, Adrian, about your story and what's behind your little SaaS project. How's it going?
Dude, it's pretty good, man. It was at like 1,000 monthly recurring at the beginning of the year, and now it's like, it's tough because it's pay as you go, so it's not like necessarily recurring, but people continue to like reuse it. But it's like 14,000, 13,000 as of like last month, so it's going great.
Oh, that sounds awesome. Like, before we get into the details of what your startup does, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, man. So I actually graduated with a psychology degree. Useless degree. Like, I really regret that going to college for 4 years, or I went for 5 years. Graduated with psychology degree, moved to San Francisco, was delivering food for Uber while trying to learn how to code. Went to a coding boot camp, got a job in Utah for a few years as a software engineer, moved to Texas, quit my job, and tried to make it work out. And so now we're here.
So, okay. So I would not say it's useless, because like I think psychologists are in pretty high demand, but if it's just not your thing, then maybe it wasn't meant to.
I worked so hard in college, man. And that was in 2012 to like 17. I just wish I would have moved to like Silicon Valley at that time and just done whatever, you know, like just poured people coffee or something like that. Yeah. But anyway, lesson learned.
So then you transitioned into tech. And what was your first job?
Yeah, my first job, very ironically, it was called Current.Tech. They're still around, but they were scraping social media. And then like a database of social media creators. And I think at that time, like, it pretty much was just tracking their campaigns. And this was before short form. So it was very much like influencer 1.0 kind of thing. But ironically, I didn't even like think, I never even asked, like, the dude who did a lot of scraping, I never even asked him about the scraping stuff at all. Because like I was a brand new software engineer, so I was still trying to learn like the front end stuff. So the scraping stuff was completely like mind blowing to me. But yeah, ironically, my first job was like social media, like scraping stuff.
So did that also like, what was the reason why you did get into that topic, or was there something in between?
Not really at all. Because the reason I got more into scraping was because my second job, which was like event management software, then one of my friends who was my product manager, we were scheming all the time on ideas of like businesses to do. And then one time he was like, well, my wife, it has been really trying to get this Lululemon, but it keeps going out of stock. So And he noticed too that the Lululemon subreddit was just huge, with these women who were obsessed with trying to get the stuff also. So he's like, if you could build a bot that would notify someone when it was back in stock, then that would be, that might do pretty well. And that actually did. It made like, $500 pretty consistently. I sold that for like $20,000, and yeah, I kind of wish I didn't sell it, but I ran out of money. Anyway, so that really kind of got me into scraping, and then did another project that had to do with scraping. And I was like, oh, I really, really like this. And so kind of just continued doing that.
Okay. I mean, you're around on Twitter as the web scraping guy, like, I don't know, forever or something.
No, just for 3 years. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a lot of interesting hot takes that you did, like scraping LinkedIn and stuff. But you mentioned you were like a freelancer, like in between before starting the SaaS, right?
Yeah, for sure. Well, there was, so I quit my job in 2022, and then I didn't have like that project, which was lemondrops.io. You can still look at, but it's sold to somebody else. So that was bringing in a tiny bit of money. And then I had savings of like $30,000. Mm-hmm. So then that dried up and then I had to figure out what to do. So then I went on Upwork and was doing some jobs on Upwork. That really sucked though. And then,
yeah, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, but it did pay for my bills. Like it did come in handy. So anyone, you know, who's trying to do freelance stuff, like it does come in handy. But then I was like, well, if I could just like blow up on Twitter, then that would be better probably. So then just like got pretty lucky. Cause I saw this other guy, Andrew Perino, doing giveaways on Twitter, and a lot of them were scraping scripts. So he would just write the script and then give it away. And it wasn't very difficult. So I was like, oh, I bet if I do one of those a day that something good would happen. And so then, that's when my first thing that blew up was the Zillow scraping, giveaway. And then, so I did that really tided me over for a while. So I did a bunch of like work for real estate people, like commercial real estate and others. Yeah. And then I did a course, which was really helpful, but then the course kind of dried up. And so then that's when I had to go balls to the wall on Scrape Creators, and it worked out. Thankfully.
So would you say that your Twitter or X presence like drastically improved your chances to get clients?
Saved my life, man. Saved my life, really, my Twitter account. Like many times, like three times in particular, I'm down and out. I have no money. And then do some work on Twitter and then I'm back up and I'm okay again. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we hear that on this podcast so many times over and over again, like build connections to people, provide value, go out, and things will come. And this is another example, I guess.
Yeah, dude, giving away free stuff.
Yeah.
Giving away free stuff. Like everyone likes the free stuff. And that's what I really learned. And especially as a scraper as well, like you can just scrape a ton of data and then give it away. Like that's, I really wish I would have saved my Crunchbase scrape for promoting Scrape Creators, but that really helped also. So if you can scrape a very valuable data set, you know, legally, then and then just give it away for free, like that's a ton of value that people will, that'll give you attention because, yeah, it's just a ton of value.
I think that Crunchbase data set is also where I first saw your Twitter account, right? And it was like 100,000 startups on from Crunchbase.
It was a million
or something.
Yeah, it's like 1.3 million or something.
1.3 million. Oh, that's a large data set.
Yeah, and honestly, like it wasn't that usable, I don't think, but people wanted that data, and if you were a programmer, you could figure out how to use it. But yeah, it wasn't even maybe that usable, but worked out.
Speaking of which, I mean, Crunchbase is probably one of the hardest sites to scrape because they have so many restrictions in front of them. Captchas and all that stuff, IP blockers, rate limiters. So what's your technical experience in like circumventing those?
Well, so it wasn't as difficult, and I will give a shout out. I believe it was Inigo on Twitter. Inigo, I can't remember. I got his handle right here. Inigo Garcia. Oh man, here, I'll put it in the chat. I don't know how to say
it. Yeah, we put it down in the links below.
Yeah, so Inigo, this was his idea. I saw that he tweeted that a good way to get around something like this is that Google in the past, they just discontinued it. But it was a great hack. That Google had a cache of every page that they had crawled. Yeah, so then you access that data. But the beauty about the Crunchbase data is that you don't need, like, it's not changing from week to week, really. It's like if it's up there, it's probably pretty good for months. Yeah. So that was the hack is, you know, for every page, you just put that URL, append it to, you know, I forget what the Google URL was for the cache. And then you get, you know, all of the data. So that's what I did. And it was beautiful. Thank you, Inigo.
They don't block the Google bots. But then you had to deal with the restrictions that Google itself set up, right?
No. So Google, it's their cache, like their cache of the page. So it's like some URL before and then the Crunchbase URL. And it doesn't exist anymore. They got rid of it. But it's basically like the web archive. But unfortunately, like the web archive, I don't think has as much data as Google does. But that's another thing you potentially could do if you're trying to scrape something else like this, is use the web archive or the Wayback Machine, you know, same thing. Google doesn't have money.
And then based out of that experience, you started providing your own API for.
Oh, sorry, dude. You were breaking up pretty hardcore there. What were you saying?
Sorry. So based from that experience, you started your own API for scraping social media profiles and messages.
Well, how that started is I actually saw the Shortomize guys first. They first built this TikTok database of they just scraped a bunch of TikTok profiles. And at first they had I think just a couple hundred thousand, or maybe it was less than 100,000. And because I was looking for a product to do around scraping, because I knew I wanted to start a product and in the niche of scraping something. So I saw that and I was like, oh, I could do that. So then I did the same thing where I scraped a bunch of TikTok users and then put them in a database, where someone could search. And then to get the email was pretty easy from TikTok because many people just have it in their bio. So you just have this big database of TikTok creators that someone can search and they can export emails and stuff like that. So then I did that. Then one of my followers DM'd me and he's like, hey man, I know you're doing stuff around social media. You should take a look at this MicroAcquire listing. And it was a listing for a social media scraping API. And I couldn't believe the numbers that it was doing. And I was like, oh, I should probably just do this. So then I built an MVP soon after that, got a customer soon after that. And then that company on MicroAcquire actually shut down because they got a cease and desist. They shut down. And then I didn't really do much with scrape creators for 6 months. And then in January, then I was like, okay, maybe I should take it more seriously. And that's when I kind of went balls to the wall on scrape creators. Yeah.
So what does it do in particular? It's like an API to access all the social media sites like LinkedIn, Twitter, TikTok.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a scraping API. So it just scrapes public data. So if you visit something in an incognito window, open incognito on Chrome and try to visit a web page, and that's basically the same stuff that I scrape. So it's pretty limited, but it helps me, stay compliant and legal because I don't scrape anything behind the login. So for example, there was a great indie hacker I'm going to forget his name now. But he built a scraper for Twitter, a Twitter API. So socialdata.tools. O'Brien. But then he recently got shut down because Twitter sent him a cease and desist and he was scraping behind the login. So yeah, I scrape just public data and it just enables you so you don't have to build scrapers. You just call the API and get the data.
Awesome. So, and what tech stack did you build this upon?
So I am just a Node.js developer, so JavaScript. So it's all JavaScript. It's an Express server. But soon I'm going to move that over to just a bunch of AWS Lambda functions, I think, for better scalability. And so it's cheaper. But yeah, it's all in Node.js.
Okay. And do you use any proxies or something like that?
Oh, yeah. I definitely use... That is a big thing is just kind of rotating through the different proxies. So I use three of them actually, and I use WebShare, Evomi, and Dakoto, which is formerly Smart Proxy.
Okay. So, and what's your experience with these proxy services?
My experience is that they all have pros and cons, and you want to have backups because one of them probably will go down, and so you just want to back it up with something else. Evomi has a crazy deal of 49 cents a gig for residential proxies. And normally that's like $2 a gig. So it's like,
what, I think you should explain like what a residential proxy is.
Yeah. So you have like in order to get around blocks, you have two different proxies, really, data center and then residential. So as you can imagine, data center gets you around stuff that doesn't have a lot of security, whereas residential, and there's different like really tiers of residential, like anyway, yeah, there's a lot that you could go into, I think, but there's different tiers of residential even. So to get like the ultra primo residential will get you around a lot of things, like Facebook or Instagram, for example, is a good one where you kind of need like the best proxies for that. Whereas YouTube, like, they don't really care. You can use data center IPs to get around them. So those residential ones are just really expensive normally, as they like probably should be. It's like literally someone's computer, I believe, like, you know, or I don't know how they get them. But it's like something
for the server provider, it looks like as if someone was accessing the site from like a normal consumer internet connection, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in some cases, I think it might be actually like someone's physical machine.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Like, I don't know exactly how. And that's the thing is that I don't know exactly how it's done. I would love to interview someone about how they make proxies and get these IPs. But sometimes I think it's like a shady business. But yeah, so Evomi is super cheap, but they were breaking a lot. So then I was using, other proxies like on Dakoto. But if you can get away with just Evomi for that residential deal, like that's a killer deal.
Yeah, very interesting. Like another thing that came to my mind is you mentioned it's all in Express.js or it's all Node.js JavaScript. Do you just put a GET request out there, or do you have something like a virtual that renders also like the JavaScript part of the site?
Well, the secret is to all the scraping is then I just make HTTP requests. So I either request the web page, if it's like a server rendered, you know, they're just all the data is in the HTML, then I'll just request the HTML page. But usually like, if it's a SPA, right? Isn't that what it is? A single page.
Yeah, like a single page application that has like loading stuff in the browser on the client side.
Yeah, so that's like my favorite because then they're making API calls themselves. And so then you just make, you know, an API call to the API they're calling. And then you just get the data back in the JSON. So you don't have to parse anything. It's beautiful. Already formatted, and so that's what I do most of the time.
Very cool. You mentioned migrating to Lambda functions. Just out of curiosity, did you look into the Cloudflare offering, because they also have like browser rendering built in? That's what came to my mind.
Yeah, someone else mentioned Cloudflare, and I'm just more familiar with AWS, and so I would probably just go with them just because kind of need to like move fast. And I have a bunch of stuff already on AWS and I'm already familiar with the Lambda functions. So I'll probably just go with them. But I've heard, that Cloudflare has something similar.
Yeah, I think I heard it from other web scraping professionals that they use it because they have that pre-rendering client-side stuff. But if you go by just scraping the API directly, I think you don't want to need that.
Yeah. So that's pretty interesting, but I'm definitely not the expert to talk about like Puppeteer or Selenium because I try to avoid those at all costs.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So another question is like, how long did it take for you to build that service?
Well, the MVP, not that, well, it depends what you mean because, you know, I really had like a 2-year education of like, you know, building scrapers for a bunch of different things. Mm-hmm. So I already had, and then my course also, maybe my course came out later. I think it did actually. Anyway, throughout like the 2 years, I had built already scrapers for like YouTube, Instagram, Twitter. So then all I had to do, which is why I was like, oh, this is a good idea because I could just put those up, you know, as an MVP. Yeah. And then, yeah. See if I got a customer and then like slowly added to it, you know, for the next year and a half. So like the initial version didn't take very long because I had already built those scrapers up over the last couple of years.
So, and by the time you were launching that service, you already had like a following on Twitter, that you already had an audience, you had reach. So that probably was not easy, but it was easier than starting from zero with marketing it.
Well, I'll tell you what. So at the beginning, I really didn't market it because I was kind of in between two products. Uh-huh. And I learned that I just needed to go all in on one. Yeah, that was like a big mistake that I made, is just trying to bounce between all these different projects. Like if I stuck to one, then that's when I really started to see the growth. But so at the beginning, I only had one customer at the beginning, and I got them because I scraped their site and then tweeted about it. And then their CTO like replied with a crying emoji. And then I was just like, ha ha, yeah, sorry, dude. And then he messaged me about, or I forget who messaged who. I think he messaged me about using my Instagram API. And so then they became a customer. They're still a customer. And it's been like, yeah, a year and a half. So that's been great. And then I really didn't get another customer until like January. So I got one in June and then didn't get another until like maybe December. Yeah, maybe it was December or November. And then really in January, I started like putting more effort like for the docs, making the website better, and then just tweeting about it more. And then, yes, for sure, once I like, you know, constantly talked about it, then for sure that following definitely helped.
So if you were starting from scratch, like what would you do like for marketing a SaaS application?
Depends what the SaaS application is, I suppose. But, you know, one thing that worked for me was just like what I talked about before was a lot of those giveaways. Mm-hmm. So doing any type of like, hey, I put together this list or I made this script and here it is, like comment, you know, X or scraper to get it for free. Really similar to those N8N guys. Like they put together those workflows, comment, you know, X, and I'll give it away for free. Like those crush on like LinkedIn and a little bit of Twitter. So yeah, I think giving away free stuff is, that helped me anyway.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I mean, that's, by the way, again, like how we met.
Yeah, I mean, all of my Twitter following, yeah, is like, I met this guy in Medellin, Colombia, actually, Ryan, one of my good friends. Now he's building a startup, and we eventually figured out, like, you know, he followed me on Twitter. We just met randomly at a bar, and then, but he followed me too from I think that Crunchbase giveaway. Like that Crunchbase giveaway, you know, really changed. Yeah. Changed a lot of things for me. Yeah,
because that was also like the B2B part of it. I can imagine.
Yeah. Also, like I don't get a lot of like I got a lot of people from the giveaways, but it's not like, if you look at my follower count, then I don't really have the reach that some people do. Like people follow me because of those giveaways, but not because of like my takes necessarily. So I guess that's one thing is like the free stuff gets you attention, but doesn't necessarily get you like a loyal following. Like for example, the one other guy on Twitter, I forget his handle, but the class guy, the K-L-A-S-S guy, Kloss.
I guess there are a lot of them.
Yeah, Forge Blitz, this guy.
Ah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, so he has all of these takes, right, that go like mega viral, and we have very similar follower counts. But he has like more spicier takes than I do. But not all followings are created equal. Whereas like, well, one, I don't think I have as many spicy takes as he does. But he seems like more of kind of a thought leader than, and people follow him for his takes. Whereas me, it's like people kind of follow me just for free stuff, which is fine. But I guess just be aware if you give away a bunch of free stuff, then people kind of like it follow.
Might end up a little bit different.
Yeah, it's just not the same as like, people follow you for your good takes or something like that. Or like he had Forge Blitz, yeah, Kloss, had a scraping tweet that went mega viral. And like I have never had like one of my just knowledge drop tweets go mega viral, which is like always very sad for me. But yeah, anyway.
So do you also like receive like kind of negative feedback, maybe based because like like you mentioned that a sad emoji from a company that you scraped and maybe they don't like it.
He was just being kind of playful.
Yeah, but does it happen a lot of times like that companies are trying to complain or?
Well, I've gotten a cease and desist. I've gotten two or three cease and desists. One was from Crexy, which is a commercial real estate. You know, it's kind of like Zillow, but for commercial real estate. And they sent me one, but it was just a tutorial video that I was doing. So I was like, pound sand. And then, I guess I kind of got four because then from that Crunchbase one, then they sent me a tweet or they sent me a DM on Twitter and they're like, yeah, please delete. Then I was like, I literally said, go pound sand and then screenshotted that and then tweeted that out. And then that actually did better than the actual giveaway. So those few days were pretty fun. And then I got a cease and desist from Meta, or I got two cease and desists from Meta. They actually, I had 25,000 followers on Instagram. They deleted, they nuked my Instagram account, and then they nuked my Facebook account too, like my personal Facebook account. So that is one thing. If you scrape social media, like be prepared that they will retaliate. Like the guy that I talked about before, Brian, who was scraping Twitter, like they nuked his Twitter account too. So these social medias, if you become like decently prominent or loud about it, they will nuke your stuff.
So how did you fight it? And how did you manage to not like freak out about like these?
Oh, I was freaking out.
Complaints.
Oh, I was freaking out. This was in like March and I was an idiot where I was getting desperate because I was like barely paying my rent. So then I released some endpoints for like getting information behind the login. So like you can get someone's followers or email. And then I was like, oh, you know, Instagram's not going to notice. Meta's not going to notice. And then, yeah, like a few days later, I get that email from them. So initially, yeah, I got rid of all of those private ones. That was really stupid of me and impatient. So got rid of all of the private endpoints and then just had, well, at first I got rid of all of the Instagram and Facebook stuff from the documentation, but then still would run them for the current customers. And then eventually I brought back, you know, all the documentation, everything. And yeah, and ChatGPT honestly like coached me through it and was so reassuring. It was like, dude, you're okay. Like, it's not that big of a deal. Like, they send this out to everybody. It's just a numbers game. And ChatGPT was totally correct. And Yeah, it was like so not
we,
that big.
By the way, we managed to talk about all that stuff without mentioning AI for like half an hour. And now you're mentioning AI being a lawyer.
Dude, the best
cool.
lawyer, bro. The best. Like, I would never. That was so helpful because then I could just talk to that and then I didn't have to like seek outside counsel or something. What I learned though is like a cease and desist is not a big deal. Like, I was kind of freaking out because it was my entire business. But if you get a cease and desist, it's really not that big of a deal. Like, you could just even ignore it, or you could like clap back. Like, it's not that big of a deal. If they sue you, yeah, then, but they don't want to sue you. They're trying all their hardest so they don't have to do that. So they're just trying to scare you and intimidate you. And the letter was pretty intimidating though, because they're like, yeah, we want all, like, you need to give us your code. You need to give us all of the money that you earned from this project. I was like, oh, hell no.
Oh, wow. That's not.
Yeah. So it's pretty intimidating. But yeah, eventually like they leave you alone. And also, they did the same thing to Scraping Bee. So I have a lot of confidence now about like their playbook, especially Meta, is the exact same thing. They send the exact same like language for everybody. And they send two of the cease and desist, like one, and then a couple later they send another one. Because Pierre, I heard him talking about it, and it was the same exact language and playbook that they ran with me. So yeah, it's not that big of a deal.
Okay. So I mean, you said you freaked out, but like posting a screenshot of the direct message like was will not comply doesn't sound like you freaked out at all.
Sorry. So the Crunchbase one, I didn't care at all because that was a one-time giveaway. But then when I got the cease and desist from Meta, that's when I was like really freaking out.
Yeah.
Because that was my entire business, you know?
Yeah. Okay. And so are you comfortable with sharing some numbers on how it's going for you? Like, can you make a living out of it? Or
Yeah. Like I said before, so at the beginning of the year, it was like at $1,000 monthly recurring revenue. It was like nothing. And then now, like last month, it was like $14,000, you know, so that was January, it was like 1,000. And September 10th, it's at, you know, 14,000. Like, these scraping APIs like are very profitable and like lucrative. And really, Scraping Bee kind of started it off. But yes, they can be very profitable. And that micro acquire listing that I saw, the reason I was like so that I had confidence that it could work, because I had zero confidence that a scraping API would work until I saw that listing. But that listing, they had less than 100 customers. They were doing $30,000 monthly recurring revenue, and their only source of leads was SEO. They'd been around 3 years, but only wrote like 40 blog posts or something. So when I saw all of those numbers, I was like, wow, this is incredible. Like, yeah, you don't even have to have that many customers or like do that many blog posts. Like, no one knew who they were, but they were, you know, crushing it with two people. So yeah, these scraping APIs, highly recommend doing one.
I mean, and also like in the age of AI, like those data sets may become even more important to people, right?
Yes. Yeah. Like, because what's one thing that AI is terrible at? Well, it's getting live real-time data. So if you can gather that, yeah, especially like real-time, then yeah, it's not, it is very like defensible. Yes.
Do you have like an MCP server or something?
No, I need to build one. I tried to a couple months ago, but yeah, it just was like, it only worked on Cloudflare's thing and didn't work on Claude because of like some bug. Anyway, I didn't think, like, I thought that a lot of MCP stuff was kind of hype. And I feel like I've been kind of like a little bit vindicated because you don't hear as much about it right now. But I should eventually do it. It's just really, really low on the priority list.
Yeah, got it. But like, would you recommend like going into the scraping business to other people as well? Because like, is there enough room for other scraping startups right now? What do you think?
Dude, that's the thing, is like, there's just more stuff like that I find all the time. Like, My buddy Jordan runs Cobalt Intelligence. And so you can check out that site. Yeah, shout out to Jordan, cobaltintelligence.com, I believe is his site. And so that's another API service that you could do that, you know, I would have never thought of. Logo.dev, which I just tweeted about yesterday, which is run by this guy, Alex Baldwin. And that is just like serving up company logos, which I would have never thought would have been a business. Also, Dimitro, who runs Screenshot One, you know, that's another API. Yeah. So there's also financialdatasets.com, I believe, which is scraping all of the SEC data in the United States, like, which I kind of, yeah, that was brilliant. So there are like some opportunities out there. Or the biggest opportunity out there right now is for flight data. So seats.aero, like what that guy's doing, Ian, that dude is making like $8 million a year by himself or with like a small team. And he's scraping flight data and then presenting it, you know, nice to the users. But if you could build an API around like flight data, or, you know, just copy seats.aero or make it a little bit better, you would make, like, I wish I was starting that. I wish I would have been doing that instead of this, honestly, because that guy is making a crap ton of money. But there's a huge opportunity in the flight data, because like people want that flight data too and would pay for an API for that. So yeah, absolutely.
So how would you do market research? I mean, how would you know that people like flight data, if you're not like in the travel or hospitality industry, how did you actually choose the social media API?
Yeah, the only thing was because of MicroAcquire, because somebody, like, I would have had no clue that it was a good idea until I saw that somebody else was doing it and then was selling it or was like making MRR from it. So I had no confidence that it would be good until I saw somebody else. But I'm telling you, like, as someone, because I got hired to scrape seats.aero for information, and the fact that it's making that much money, like, I'm, for everything else, like, it's, yeah, I don't know. I would, if I was somebody else, I would just be looking at like MicroAcquire listings and seeing like what's on there, because you could see a huge array of like SaaS businesses for sale. And then just like maybe get ideas that way. But at least for the airline industry, man, I'm telling you, dude, like people would want that data, and it's like very, very valuable.
Yeah. But, I mean, the airline industry, just as the proxy industry, if we can call it like that, like whenever there is a hidden data set or something that isn't directly publicly accessible, things can come a bit shady. But also there is a tremendous value in that, like surfacing that.
Yeah. Well, as long as you get it publicly, like as long as the company exposes it publicly, then it's publicly available. So then like you just can't, like that's the big thing around scraping. You can't get private data, but if it's publicly available, like you don't have to log in, it's available on an incognito browser, then it's fair game. And yeah, there's huge opportunity like that. Airline data, for whatever reason, is just so, so valuable. And I think you're exactly right. There is no easy API. So if someone had a really easy to use API to get that data, like, oh, yeah, for sure, people are going to, or you just recreate seats.aero for like make it better or different. Yeah.
Yeah. So speaking of that incognito window, so not that we want to give legal advice here, but like a lot of sites have in their terms and conditions that they are not willing to be accessed automatically or via scripts. Does that count?
Nah, dude, it's complete bullshit. Like, so, and you just need to like, if you want to research it yourself, then yeah, look at HiQ versus LinkedIn or Bright Data versus Meta, Bright Data versus Twitter. And all of those rulings, like, yeah, you can't, each site cannot police their section of the internet or like, yeah, differently than other places. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you can't say that, oh, these are our terms and conditions, and if you access it, then you're accessing our terms and conditions. It's like, no, you need to put it behind a login, because the reason that it's not behind the login is because people still want SEO juice from it. So yeah. Like Crunchbase, you know, that's all for SEO and finding, yeah, being on top of Google search results and stuff. So you can't have it both ways. And Google itself is like crawling all of this because of that. So then it's like, it's publicly accessible to everybody else, you know?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, not that we want to give legal advice here, and things might be different in other parts of the world, but it's good to know not to stress out too much about those things.
Yeah. And I think the US, like, that's probably where people are concerned about it the most, but yeah, that's true. Different places, but at the same time, like, yeah, I think the US is probably the most strict, and even here, it's like not that big of a deal, but yeah, probably check with your country, maybe.
Yeah, check with your country, check with ChatGPT, or preferably your lawyer.
Yeah, or just like legal precedents. At least like that's how it works in the United States. Then, you know, as long as, and there's, you know, those few cases that is like very, yeah, makes you very confident that you're okay. So yeah, just try to check out legal precedents.
Yeah, so that was a lot of information that we covered and a lot of valuable insights. So Adrian, thank you so much for joining this conversation.
Absolutely, dude.
Have a good one.
Thank you, brother.